From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you. Thank you. Stop that, as Bill Clinton said. Carl, it is great to have you back.
Thank you,
Peter. We have a great show for you today, everybody. Olympic gold medal gymnast Nastia Lukin will be joining us later to play Not My Job. That's very exciting. But first, we want to wag our finger a bit at John McCain. On Friday of this last week, he tried to steal the fire of the Democrats by announcing his vice presidential pick. It was a daring thing to do for a Republican, a daring pick, but we are not going to be distracted. No, this week, we are going to say rude, uninformed, borderline offensive things about the Democrats. The Republicans have to wait until next week. So let's get started. The number 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Scott Christie from Exira, Iowa.
Did you say Exira, Iowa?
I did. We're a small rural town in the rolling hills of western Iowa between Omaha and Des Moines.
What do you do there?
Well, I'm a technology coordinator for our local school district.
I didn't think small rural towns in the heartland had technology to be coordinated.
Well, we've had some electricity for the last few years.
That's great.
We've been making the best of it.
Hey, you know what I can recommend? I can recommend those magic lantern shows they have now. Very exciting. Scott, let me introduce you to our panel. First, say hello to a humorist and the author of the forthcoming book, Alphabet Juice, Mr. Roy Blunt, Jr.
Hi, Roy. Yes.
Also say hello to NPR's own Allison Stewart.
Hi, Allison.
Hey, Scott.
And lastly, say hello to an author whose most recent book is Norman Tuttle and the Last Frontier, Mr. Tom Beaudet.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Scott. How you doing?
Scott, welcome to the show. Now, you're going to play Who's Carl This Time? Carl Castle is going to read you three quotes from the week's news. Your job, of course, correctly identify or explain two of them. Do that, you'll win our prize. Carl Castle's voice on your own home voice answering technology.
Sounds great.
If you have that now.
You bet.
Okay. Ready to play?
I'm ready.
All right. Here is your first quote.
On November 4th, we must stand up and say, 8 is enough.
So who accepted the presidential nomination with a strange reference to a 30-year-old TV program?
our next president of the United States, Barack Obama.
There you are, Barack Obama. It was a little surprising, the greatest political orator of his generation, speaking to an audience of up to 90,000 people on a historic night, and he goes for the pop culture zinger. He then went on to say that if we strengthen our family ties, America will mash our opposition and once again have happy days.
I think Willie Ames was pretty psyched.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, the Democratic National Convention got off to a slow start with a series of dull speeches from speakers selected to demonstrate that whatever their race, creed, color, or region, Democrats can all stare into a teleprompter like a fawn looking into the headlights of an oncoming Republican National Convention. But Obama picked it up on that last night with his huge speech in this vast arena. The Republicans, leading up to the event, tried to steal some of the fire. They tried to mock him for the set, which featured Greek columns. They called it a Greek temple. They called it the Barackopolis. But Democrats pointed out that they were just being jealous because usually it's Republican speeches that are given in front of a lot of old, white, stiff things.
That's a classic there.
Yeah. It was strange that given what's happened over the 8 years and given what kind of advantage the Democrats wanted to take of what's happened to the 8 years and people's discontent, the angriest person was Keith Olbermann.
And he was angry at Chris Matthews.
I know. It's like, you know, right. The Democrats really couldn't work up a head of steam about anything, but Keith Olbermann was right. Like, you know.
Well, you know, I kind of switched back and forth between CNN and PBS, because PBS, if you actually wanted to watch the speech, And then CNN, if you wanted to watch the three guys talking about the speech that's droning on behind them.
Yeah.
And James Carville was always one of them. And he gets spookier looking every year, doesn't he?
he really does.
He's starting to look like that character in the Lord of the Rings movie, Gollum. You know?
Just yes.
Held onto the ring a little too long.
Yeah. You know? Hillary is his precious, I think.
My birthday.
Let's move on to your next quote. We're going to spend your entire time with us, Scott, talking about the Democratic National Convention. So here's your next quote.
To my supporters, my champions, my sisterhood of the traveling pantsuits, from the bottom of my heart, thank you.
That was someone making her swan song for the moment at the DNC. Who was it?
Well, I'm tempted to ask Carl to repeat that, but but I think I recognize the voice as Hillary Clinton.
Yes. Carl did capture that subtle Illinois/New York accent. That was very good. It was the big story of the convention going in. Would Hillary Clinton join Team Obama? Or would she go to the podium, signal for her shock troops of white women aged 45 to 60 to pull out their pink revolvers, take over the hall, and declare her empress? No, she did not. She thanked her supporters. She urged them to all keep fighting for their causes, to support Obama. And then, and this was totally cool, just as it seemed she was finally giving in, she jumped through a hidden manhole cover and escaped via the sewers, guaranteeing a sequel. Now, one of the best to some people, but weirdest moments to others during her speech on Tuesday night was when the camera during her speech kept cutting to a close-up of Bill Clinton up there in the seats. He kept mouthing the words, "I love you, I love you, I love you forever." However, careful examination of B-roll footage from the convention showed he was actually, when he was mouthing those words, he was looking at Joe Biden's mother. She was feisty, though.
I like Joe Biden.
Joe Biden's mother was great.
I'll mouth "I love you" to Joe Biden's mom. Yeah, I like her.
Because you see that? Because every time Joe Biden, there was a lot of silent mouthing. I don't know what this means during the Democratic National Convention. But every time Joe Biden told an anecdote about his mom, like, "She told me to go out there and bloody someone's nose," she up in the stands turned to somebody and said, "I did. I did that." That's true.
I thought she was going to hit somebody.
Yeah, I know.
I'll show you how, too. Come on up. I'll take it. Any old lady in the audience, I'll take them.
All right, Scott, here's your last quote from the DNC.
"Daddy, what city are you in?"
That was, we believe, the only non-scripted moment of the entire four-day spectacle. Who wondered where the heck her father was on live national TV?
And he did, too.
Yeah.
Well, that would have been the youngest of the two Obama daughters.
Yes, Sasha Obama. Ah. Sasha Obama. Perhaps the most exciting, scary, genuine moment of the convention happened on Monday night. It was right after Michelle Obama's speech, in which the talented, intimidatingly intelligent Mrs. Obama tried to convince the country that she was as mundane as the rest of us and therefore no threat to us. She actually handed a live mic on national TV to her 7-year-old daughter. Now, I have had such a creature in my house. And like parents everywhere who were watching, I leaned forward on my couch staring at the TV, expecting to see a single poorly timed but enthusiastically delivered poop joke destroy the Democratic Party forever.
My favorite was, Malia had such the big sister face.
Yeah.
When she saw the little one getting the microphone, like, in slow motion, she was like, "Mom, no, you didn't. I can't believe you gave this." Mom.
Carl, how did Scott do in our quiz?
Well, Scott was perfect, Peter. 3 correct answers, so he wins our prize.
Well done, Scott. Well done.
Thanks so much.
Okay, panel, some questions for you. And we will start, of course, by going back to Denver. Roy, Democrats wanted to make this the greenest convention ever. For example, the Sheraton Hotel provided their guests with key cards, which, instead of that awful petroleum-derived plastic, they were made from, quote, sustainably harvested wood. While I'm sure Mother Earth was weeping with gratitude, there was one little problem. What?
They didn't work in the hole, didn't fit the holes of the doors?
They didn't open the doors. Ah. They were beautiful, they were wooden, they were sustainable.
That's all right.
But
no,
they didn't work.
The main thing is they're sustainable.
Exactly.
Imagine they'll keep on not working.
Yeah.
That's right.
And then they biodegrade slowly while you're trying to open your hotel.
No, but you save all that energy that you burn in your room by
exactly.
turning on the television.
Imagine, if you will, dozens, nay, hundreds of drunk, jet-lagged Democrats up and down the corridors of the Denver Sheraton on Monday, gradually losing their tempers as they jam their wooden key cards right. into the door slot over and over again until the thing splinter into pieces. They all went down and got plastic key cards, and then they were left to seek comfort in the warm wooden blankets and their Lincoln log pillows.
Yeah. You know, they used to have this thing in hotels. There were these little metal things that,
yeah.
and you know, you'd stick them in the hole and you'd turn it and it opened the door. And then when you were done, you'd give it back to them, and then the next person would use the same
sort of like a
thing.
Recycling program.
It was great. Yeah.
Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Regina Rizzo from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Hey, how are things in Philly?
Very nice right now.
I'm glad to hear it. What do you do there?
I am a freelance costume designer and the wardrobe supervisor for the Wilma Theater.
Hey, the Wilma is great. I know the Wilma.
Oh, you do?
A fine institution. Oh, yes. Part of my secret life. Well, Regina, welcome to our show. Now, you're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction, Regina.
Okay.
Carl, what is Regina's topic?
Dorks gone wild.
At some point in their lives, everyone has encountered a dork. A straight-laced, socially awkward person afraid to take risks. Somebody who listens to public radio news quizzes. You know the type. Here's what we learned this week. Just because somebody is a member of the AV Club, do not turn your back on them. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories about wild acts by typically tame people. Choose the real story. You'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to play?
I am.
First up, let's hear from Tom Baudette.
What happens when the high school origami club books the same meeting room the Eagle Scouts were scheduled to use? Polite deferment? An exchange of crafts? No. Full-scale dork-on-dork gang violence. At least that was the case this week at Adam Newton High School in Danbury, Connecticut. It is still unclear how the fracas began, but it ended when firefighters responded to an alarm at the school. They set our sculptures on fire with these flinty little things, claimed Origami Club President Claudine Benoit. Well, they were whipping these really nasty paper airplanes and poking at us with pointy birds, countered Eagle Scout Gabe McFarlane. It really hurt. Scoutmaster and school principal Neil Unsicker was at a loss to explain the incident. Come on, these are Eagle Scouts. They've been working toward their merit badge in conflict resolution. The origami kids appear to have been the aggressors. A formal investigation is planned.
Origami Club versus Eagle Scouts in Connecticut. Your next story of the straight-laced throwing a curve comes from Allison Stewart.
Things will be different next week when students return to Braddock Senior High School in Dade County, Florida, one of the biggest schools in the country. The school made headlines last year when its students' hall monitors were given donated Segway scooters to help them patrol the sprawling campus. But when students started using the gyroscopically balanced people movers to inappropriately move people, the school board took notice. It started when the wheeled watchmen began exacting vengeance on their social superiors by ramming into football players or slowly following cheerleaders to class. Said one anonymous chess club member, it was a little scary but somewhat satisfying to see the flawless fear for their perfect lives. But then the power-mad mobilizers began to turn on one another. Turf wars broke out between the upright, uptight ones. Student monitors cut each other off, trying to deliver the most citations to the burnouts on the smoking patio. Things got really ugly last May on the last day of class when one rather aggressive monitor found his Segway tires slashed. This fall, monitors will be hoofing it. The Segways are in storage.
Segway battles. Dorks on wheels in Florida. Your last story of Geeks Unleashed comes from Roy Blunt, Jr.
When I was in school, debaters and their coaches wore jackets and ties and did not drop trowel. intercollegiate forensics seem to have changed. William Shanahan, the hirsute barefoot coach of the Fort Hays State University debate team in Kansas, was fired this week because YouTube was showing footage of him and another coach screaming obscenities at each other and incidentally debating the topic resolved that mooning someone is not immature. For after briefly presenting the other coach with a full posterior view of his undershorts, Shanahan shouts, "I don't think I'm behaving immaturely." Okay, and I guess no one will call me immature if I say the coach was putting the butt in rebuttal.
All right, then. Let's review your choices. From Tom Baudette, the Origami Club versus the Eagle Scouts in a school in Connecticut. From Allison Stewart, the dorks got segues in a big school in Florida, and it was a bad idea. From Roy Blunt Jr., a debate competition ends with a full moon. Which of these was the real story of dorks behaving badly?
This is so much tougher in person.
Isn't it, though?
I'm going to go with Roy's story.
With Roy's story of the debate club being devolved into a moon fest.
Yes.
All right. That's your choice. Well, we spoke to somebody who was an expert in this kind of behavior and was frankly a little shocked by this story.
There have definitely been times when I've been tempted to moon someone during a debate because I thought their argument had been just that bad, but we generally tend to use words instead of becoming that cheeky.
Ho-ho-ho-ho!
You thought you were bad, Roy. That was Anish Mitra, captain of the Stanford University debate team, national champion in parliamentary debate, by the way, explaining that as tempting as it may be, he doesn't typically take off his pants in tournaments. Congratulations, Regina, you got it right.
Yay,
you've earned a point for Roy. You've won our prize. Carl Castle will record the greeting in your home answering machine.
Thank you.
Thank you for playing with us today. And now the game where we ask accomplished people about things that don't matter at all. It's called Not My Job. As you may have heard, they just had this big athletic event in Beijing. And one of the big stars of this event was Nastia Lukin, born in Moscow, raised in Texas, a multiple medal winner in women's gymnastics, including a gold medal in the all-around. Nastia Lukin, we are so honored to have you on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Welcome to our show.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you. So let me start by just asking you, how are you feeling? What's it like to be done with this extraordinary event where you did so well and on such a large stage? How are you feeling these days?
You know, it's still kind of surreal to me knowing that I achieved my ultimate goal of winning the Olympics. And it's been really crazy since I've been back home. I've actually only been home for a few days. I traveled to Los Angeles to do, I was on the Jay Leno show and, a few interviews here and there. But it's definitely the time of my life right now, and I'm just trying to enjoy every minute of it.
You're really enjoying it, though. That's great. Tell me a little bit about, because we hear so much about it, about the life of the young gymnast. My understanding is that you guys just work, 60, 70 hours a week practicing in order to get ready for that level of competition. Is that true?
Well, I don't think 70 hours, but we train about 7 hours a day, and I've been doing that ever since I was about 10 or 12 years old, so it's been a really long journey, but every single moment has been worth it.
Wow, and do you ever have moments where you wish you could just be like, I guess, the rest of us and just eat a lot of junk food and laze around and not be talented?
Not really.
No.
I think a lot of people always ask me if I feel like I miss out on things, but I also am able to do things that many people my age, aren't able to do. Like, I've traveled to so many countries and experienced so many different things and been to the Olympics, and, I'm just 18 years old, so that definitely makes up for everything.
I bet. Speaking of being able to do things, and this is just me and how shallow I am, but if I could do the sort of things that you and the other gymnasts could do, the amazing flips and handstands and physical skills, I would do them all the time, just like walking around the mall, just because I could. Do you ever do that? Do you ever say to yourself, I can, jump up in the air, do three somersaults, and land on my feet without breaking a sweat, so I think I will?
No, not really.
No. Just one more good reason I'm not a gymnast.
Because of your flexibility and ability to do wonderful gymnastic things, are there things you can do, you know, ordinary things like, I don't know, getting up under the bed to get something or something that other people can't do? I mean, can you jump up and get something off a shelf?
I guess last weekend I had a photo shoot in L.A., and it was kind of on this balcony, and, they were trying to get me up a little higher, and I was like, well, I can just climb up here and sit on the step, and they're like, no, don't do that, you're going to get hurt, and I was like, no, really, it's fine, and I just they were like, oh, my gosh.
You've done harder things.
Yeah, I know, I was like, it's okay, it's just a little step up here.
Tell us a little bit about, if you can, what it is like, the experience of the Olympic athlete. We know, for example, that the Olympic Village is pretty much off limits to people who are not competitors. What's it like in there? Is it like summer camp for athletes? Is it serious? Is everybody intense, or is everybody having a good time?
Well, this was my first Olympic experience, but it was so much fun to be able to walk around and see all the different athletes from different countries, and you know, everyone's from different places, but they're all there for that same reason, and I think that's what is so cool about it.
Is there a pecking order? I just imagine everything as being like high school. So like the dining at the dining hall with all the cool like track and field athletes and gymnasts at the center tables, and over here was like, I imagine, what would the chess club be like? Would that be like the air pistol shooters? I mean,
it's funny because there was like two sides of, you know, the cafeteria, and the first day we got there, we just happened, like, we ate with all of our coaches all the time, so it was like we just happened to sit on one side, and we were there for 3 weeks, so we kind of established that we were on the non-cool side, and we always wanted to be on the other side because all the cool people were on that side, and we never got to do it because we were always with our coaches. So finally, the last day when we were done competing, we ventured out, and we sat on the other side.
There you go.
That was like the highlight.
Are there any sports that you're good at that we wouldn't think you would be, like shot putting or something?
I don't think shot putting's in my future.
No. We understand, this is great, that you are going to be on a box of Wheaties.
I am.
That's so cool.
Thank you.
Wow. I mean, is it going to be just you? Is it going to be the whole team, you and Sean Johnson?
No, just me.
How great.
Yeah,
wow.
I'm really excited. I found out a few days ago, so I'm really excited. It should be in stores at the beginning of September.
That's fantastic. Mm. That's something else.
Yeah.
Hey, I got to ask you this. The Chinese gymnast team, what do you think? They looked awfully young to me. What do you think?
You know, I've pretty much every interview I've done, I've pretty much been getting a question about that.
Sure.
But honestly, you know, what my take is that, you know, we play fair here, and I know we play by the rules, and that's the only thing that, you know, I can say. You know, we can't control what they do, and the only thing we can control is our performances. So, honestly, I have, no hard feelings toward that. I know that I won the most important gold medal, which is the all-around, and no one can take that away from me. So whatever happens, and, I couldn't be more proud of my Olympic experience.
Right. There you go. Good answer. And just because, you know, one of the other gymnasts was wearing a Dora the Explorer leotard doesn't mean anything. Could have been just a cultural enthusiasm.
What? Because I guess last year, or I think it was last year, you know, a few of the girls that were on the Olympic team, they entered a competition and said they were 13 years old. And then, you know, the year of the Olympic comes up and they're suddenly 16 years old.
Maybe time goes faster in Asia.
It might.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we are delighted to have you with us. And Nastia, we have in fact asked you here to play a game that this week we're calling
The Collected Wit and Wisdom of Matthew McConaughey.
Oh. If there's anything the career of actor Matthew McConaughey shows us, it's that being extremely handsome and being willing to take off your shirt at the drop of a, well, at the drop of a shirt, can really go a long way in this country. We recently surfed on over to Mr. McConaughey's website. We're going to ask you three things about his life and times, and mainly his words. Answer two of these three questions correctly, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice, on their voicemail. Ready to play?
Yep.
All right. Carl, who is Nastia Lukin playing for?
Peter, she is playing for Debbie Goldman of New York City.
All right. Here's your first question. On his website, Matthew McConaughey lists important quotes from himself and others, which he calls truisms. Complete this Matthew McConaughey truism. If you're high enough, A, the sun's always shining. If you're high enough, B, the only ladder gonna bring you down is hate. Or C, if you're high enough, the sun ain't nothing but a daytime moon. Which of these would Matthew McConaughey actually say?
I would say A.
You're gonna say if you're high enough, the sun's always shining.
Yeah.
You're right.
Well done. I don't think he's right, though.
No, I think he's right? No.
It's like a stoner Hallmark card.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. All right, as I said, half the time the man is photographed that he is not wearing a shirt. How does Mr. McChestahay explain what he calls his terminal tan? A, he says, I'm solar powered. B, he says, the sun ain't nothing but a daytime moon. Or C, he says, bronze skin is skin deep. With a heart of gold, you'll never be old.
Whoa.
C?
You're going to go for C. Oh, I wish. I don't think he can actually rhyme. He says... He says, I'm solar powered, is what Matthew McConaughey says. This is exciting. This is very dramatic. In this competition, there's one more event, if you will. Third question, get this, and you will, in fact, win our prize. Here we go. Matthew McConaughey may not even be the most awesome member of his family. His brother, Rooster McConaughey, has a shot at that title. What makes Rooster so awesome besides the fact that his name is Rooster? A, Rooster has a son named Miller Lite McConaughey. B, Rooster has an extra vestigial vertebrae on his coccyx, giving him a short cat-like tail. Or C, Rooster was an actor before his brother. He was the kid in the Sylvester Stallone arm wrestling movie Over the Top.
C.
So you're going to go for C, that he was the kid in the arm wrestling movie. You sure? You sure about that?
No, but you're not sure. That's my final answer.
You're just really going to stick with that? No, actually, he has a son named Miller Lite McConaughey.
Oh my God.
I mean, honestly, if you had a son, wouldn't you want to name him after a cheap, tasteless beer?
I'd have to say no.
No, I guess not. Miller Lite is also Matthew McConaughey's favorite beer. His favorite weed is weed. Carl, how did Nastia Lukin do in our quiz?
Peter, she had one correct answer. She needed two to win for Debbie Goldman.
I think I can say, I say this to everybody, but I've never meant it more, that this will not matter a whit to you. Nastia Lukin is a world champion gymnast and a winner of the multiple medals at the Beijing Olympics, including the gold medal in the women's individual all-around competition, which makes her the best female gymnast in the world. Nastia Lukin, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Congratulations.
Might as well jump.
Right now, though, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Tom, according to the New York Times, vacation resorts in the Mediterranean and elsewhere are facing a new scourge, something that's ruining business, driving up healthcare costs, and costing the industry billions. What is this menace?
Germans in thongs?
Not
no.
Germans.
No.
Not Germans. They point out with pride.
Right continent.
Russians.
No, not the Russians.
East.
Oh, east. East of Poland. That's Russia, isn't it? Ukrainian.
No, west.
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 The other east.
That way.
French people are not wearing them?
North.
Across some water.
The Danes.
Not the...
For goodness sake, the Belgians.
See, this is the big surprise.
I am demonstrating a pretty good knowledge of European geography, though.
You think of these people as being well behaved, stiff upper lip, but no.
Oh, the British.
The British, yeah.
Oh, British in a thong.
British tourists.
Wow.
The scourge of Europe, as you say, traditionally been the Speedo clad Germans. But no. Budget vacation packages are bringing hordes of rowdy Brits to Mediterranean resort towns, But the primary goal, according to the New York Times, of getting drunk, and then, once they're drunk, getting drunker.
Ah.
The mayor of the coastal Greek town of Malia says, quote, they scream, they sing, they fall down, they take their clothes off, they cross-dress, they vomit, unquote.
I saw a Benny Hill episode.
Allison, Joe Biden is, of course, the vice presidential nominee. Now, despite his 30-plus years in Washington, there's one thing that still puzzles all the pundits and analysts in Washington when it comes to Joe Biden. What?
His comb-over?
Exactly. But they don't know that it's a comb-over. That's the mystery. Biden has been a U.S. senator since the age of 29, so he's afforded political observers a chance to watch him lose his hair, which he did for a while, and then something odd happened. Some of the hair came back. In suspiciously regular rows. It seemed a different color than the rest of his hair, observers noted, when he moved his head to the side. Sometimes he had to take a second to talk his bangs into coming along. Now, Biden...
And he can talk his bangs into... So you know they came.
Biden remains sensitive about his hair. On Thursday of this last week, the day after he accepted with great enthusiasm the vice presidential nomination, he was getting a picture taken with a National Guardsman outside the hall, and he said to the guy, and this is true, he said, quote, if I had your hair, I'd be president. You know what I mean? I wouldn't be screwing around with this job. Unquote.
Oh, it begins.
It really does.
Well, Eisenhower was bald. We've had bald presidents.
Yeah, Eisenhower was bald.
John Adams.
Although my feeling is they photographed Eisenhower. John Adams? Yeah,
well,
I guess
he's
so.
He was bald. He had these things. Tufts.
You're thinking of Paul Giamatti.
Paul Giamatti.
Basically, it's Eisenhower and the guy in Dr. Strangelove. That's basically it. Tom, moving on from politics. Tired of stereotypes that ladies in his line of work were old and stunted and sad, an Italian man announced plans this week to hold a very special beauty pageant. His bosses, though, didn't like the idea. He had to call it off. He wanted to throw a beauty pageant for whom?
Nuns.
Exactly right. A nun beauty pageant.
There she is, Sister Teresa Amelia.
Saying, quote, being ugly is not a requirement for becoming a nun, unquote, Father Antonio Rungi had planned to showcase young celibate hotties in his Miss Sister 2008 pageant. Plenty of nuns, he says, told him they wanted to take part, but his superiors were not happy. One bishop remarked, we won't have our nuns become sex symbols. The next thing you know, it'll be Catholic schoolgirls.
I was once in Paris, France, accompanying a bunch of Cajuns led by Governor Edwin Edwards of Louisiana. And there was a nun in Paris who was from Louisiana, and she presented Edwards with the key to the city. And she kissed him on the cheek, and he said, watch out, sister, I don't want to get into the habit.
That's really good. Yeah. What would the talent portion of this beauty pageant be? Knuckle wrapping?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Father Rungi is disappointed in the cancellation of his pageant. He's already hard at work on his next project, American False Idol. Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. You can also go to our website at waitwait.npr.org, where you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago. Or you can download the Wait Wait podcast for your computer or MP3 player. Hi, you're on Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello.
Hi, who's this?
This is Carol.
Hey, Carol, where are you calling from?
Elk Grove, California.
Where is Elk Grove, California?
Just south of Sacramento.
South of Sacramento, out there in the great Sacramento Valley. And what do you do there?
I'm a state worker.
A state worker. So you basically work for Arnold Schwarzenegger, ultimately.
Yes, and he threatened to pay me federal minimum wage.
Really? That was awfully nice of him.
Yes.
Wow, and what was your reaction to this?
We depended on our controller to straighten him out.
There you are. Whacked him around a little bit.
Yes.
He's not that tough. He's got a glass jaw, really. He just push him around a little and he folds up. Try it next time you see him. Welcome to our show, Carol. Carl Castle, right now, is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, on two of the limericks, you will be a winner. Ready to go?
Sure.
Here's your first limerick.
Us crows, those big guys tried to chase, but their features were easy to place. So we rose to the task and remembered their masks. We crows don't forget a man's
face.
Right. John Marsluff of the University of Washington had a feeling that some of the crows he worked with didn't like him. And so he decided to see if the crows really could remember and dislike a human face. He outfitted one group of volunteers with rubber caveman masks and another set with, of all things, Dick Cheney rubber masks. And then the caveman masks harassed a population of crows. The Dick Cheneys just lay there and didn't bother the crows at all. And months later, the volunteers returned. They put their masks back on to see if the crows remembered them. One faux caveman said, quote, "The birds were really raucous, screaming persistently. It was clear they weren't upset about something in general. They were upset with me." The crows treated the Dick Cheneys, however, with affection. They proved another controversial theory. Crows own stock in Halliburton. Mm-hmm.
And they watch out for guys with shotguns.
Exactly. Why Dick Cheney? I don't know. All right, very good. Here's your next limerick.
I am 9, and I did as I should. I pitched the ball hard as I could. But it's not from fatigue that I'm out of the league. They kicked me out 'cause I'm too...
good.
Right. Jericho Scott was the not-so-secret weapon for the Willpower Fitness Little League team in New Haven, Connecticut. The 9-year-old pitcher has a wicked fastball, tops out at 40 mph. The only problem? No one will play with him. Scott throws so hard that his league told his coach not to let him pitch. And when he took the mound last week, the quaking opposing players forfeited rather than face his amazing arm. Despite the setback, it looks likely that Scott will land on his feet. He's already been courted by another Little League team in the area, the New York Yankees. One last limerick for you. Here we go.
Thanks to cowboys, we're peripatetic. But when ruminant, we're empathetic. While we're chewing forth, as a group, we point north. Like a compass, we cows are...
They're attractive.
They're attractive. Like a compass.
Rhymes with Eric.
You don't know it? Shall I just give it to you? You've already won. How about magnetic?
Oh, for Pete's sake.
Really? So have you ever gone up to a herd of cows and just tried to push their backsides together?
No.
And they have them go... And then they like bounce off to go in opposite directions. Yeah, That's because they're magnetic.
Yeah.
Cows, it turns out that scientists studied over 8,000 Google Earth photos of pastures, you know, from above, and they discovered that cows and deer always face either magnetic north or south while they're grazing. Scientists say it's because they're reacting to the planet's magnetic influence. Mm-hmm. This is the first time such large animals have been shown to have this ability, and the news is already revolutionizing the cattle ranching industry. Some ranchers are planning to do away with traditional stockyards and simply stick cows to the sides of their refrigerators.
That's why rodeo riders wear those big metal belt buckles.
Yeah, exactly. Carl, how did Carol do in our quiz?
Well, Carol, you had two correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
Well done. Carol, congratulations. Well, you don't take any more guff from that Schwarzenegger guy. He's just a bully.
I'd love to.
Take care. Thank you, Carol.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Stuck on you. Got this feeling down deep in my soul that I just can't lose. Guess I'm on my way.
Now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer is worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Roy Blunt Jr. has the lead, Peter. He has 4 points. Tom Beaudet has 3. And Allison Stewart has 1.
All right.
Oh.
Well, Allison, you are in third place, so you are up first. Here we go. The clock will start when I begin your first question, fill in the blank. This week, Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki demanded a complete U.S. military withdrawal from blank by 2011.
Iraq.
Right. Israel began releasing 200 Palestinian prisoners just as blank arrived to begin peace talks.
Condoleezza Rice.
Right. The last of four defendants charged in the escort scandal that brought down Blank pled guilty on Monday.
Elliot Spitzer.
Right. Puerto Rican singing star Daddy Yankee announced that he is endorsing Blank for president.
John McCain.
Apparently because Obama wouldn't have him. In a rant on his video blog, Sean Diddy Combs revealed that high gas prices have forced him to blank.
Record with Lionel Richie.
No, fly commercial. Songwriter Carriott DeGuardio will be joining the television show Blank as a fourth judge this season.
American Idol.
Right, a man holding five people hostage in an Iowa motel was arrested after he sent his hostages out to Blank.
Get pizza.
Almost! Beer!
Oh! Oh!
Jason Slagle was pretty angry. So angry he took five hostages in an Iowa motel room, but not so angry he didn't want a beer. Maybe some chips, too. He sent two of his hostages out on a beer run. Only after they promised on their honor to come back. Sadly, hostages aren't as reliable as they used to be.
Where's the integrity?
I know. Carl, how did Allison do in our quiz?
Well, Allison had five correct answers for 10 more points. She now has 11 points
well
and
done.
The lead.
Well done. All right. Tom, you're up next. Fill in the blank. Hundreds of East Coast flights were delayed on Tuesday because of a blank.
Traffic control fiasco. The traffic control system went down.
Yeah, software malfunction. On Thursday, Major League Baseball reversed a decades-old decision and began using blank.
Instant replay.
Right. The daughter of former British Prime Minister Blank announced that she is suffering from dementia.
Tony Blair.
No. Margaret Thatcher. Thieves who broke into a Brazilian woman's car blanked when they saw what bad shape it was in.
Left it alone.
No, actually, they left her some money in the car.
Oh.
They felt bad for her. After concertgoers at Ohio State University complained about his voice, Blank announced that he would refund unhappy fans.
Gotta be Bob Dylan.
No, it was Neil Diamond, saying it infringes on the Harry Potter franchise. Warner Brothers has filed a lawsuit against a new Bollywood movie called Blank.
I don't know. I'm going to take the hit. I have no idea.
You should have gone for it. It was Harry Potter.
I was going to say that. I was actually going to say that, and I thought it would be rude and get us a lot of mail.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You didn't want to be rude, but the truth is ruder. Harry Potter, a comedy of terrors. Munish Puri, the CEO of the Bollywood studio releasing the Harry Potter movie, doesn't understand what all the fuss is about. Says Puri, quote, "In my opinion, I don't think our title has any similarity or links with Harry Potter." Carl, how did Tom do?
Well, Tom had two correct answers.
Oh.
Wow. Four more points. He now has 7 points, but Allison still has the lead with 11 points.
All right. How many, then, does Roy need to win?
He needs 4 to win.
Here we go, Roy. This is for the game.
All right.
Louisiana declared a state of emergency in anticipation of Hurricane Blank.
Gustav.
Right. On Thursday, Vladimir Putin said that the U.S. orchestrated the military conflict in Blank.
Oh, South Ostia.
Yeah, Georgia. Sure. Despite being treated for brain cancer, Blank gave a moving speech at the Democratic Convention.
Teddy Kennedy.
Right. The FDA announced that it would allow food growers to begin blanking vegetables to limit the growth of food-borne pathogens.
Radiating.
Right. In an attempt to break up a drug smuggling ring, police in Bosnia have thrown a blank behind bars.
Drug smuggler.
A drug smuggling pigeon.
Oh!
Cloris Leachman, Lance Bass, and Susan Lucci were among those named as participants in this season's blank.
Susan Lucci. Oh, the Dancing with Stars.
Right. Aaron Sorkin announced that he was writing a movie based on the popular social networking site Blank.
Facebook.
Right. An elderly woman at an airport in Sweden still managed to catch her flight, even though she had blanked.
She caught her flight even though she was stuck to her rocking chair, which she had to load herself in her rocking chair into the cab and then had to be unloaded into the airport somehow.
No, actually, she made her flight even though she had put herself down the baggage chute.
Oh.
Airport workers told the woman to put her luggage in the conveyor belt, but she misunderstood. She lay down in the belt herself. Went down. She ended up in the baggage handling center. Staff members picked her up, dusted her off, and sent her to Guam by mistake.
Maybe she was thinking of emotional baggage.
Yeah. Carl, did Roy do well enough to win?
He needed 4 correct answers. Roy had 6 correct answers.
Oh.
So with 16 points, Roy Blunt Jr. is this week's champion.
Congratulations, Roy.
Thank you.
Well done.
It's not a gold or anything. But
No, it's not. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists, what will John McCain do next week at the Republican National Convention to top Barack Obama's big acceptance speech? But first, let me tell all of you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations. And the Music Performance Fund, striving to enrich lives by sponsoring thousands of public concerts in the United States, schedules at musicpf.org. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. And the Annenberg Foundation, advancing public well-being through improved communication, on the web at annenbergfoundation.org. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio. In association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Godica writes our limericks. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our technical director is Robert Newhouse. Other engineers include Lorna White, Les Dolarchik, and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac and Jewel Dolce at Chase Bank. BJ Liddyman composed our theme. Our program is directed by Melody Kramer and produced by Emily Ecton. And Ian Chillag this week, the senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, is Mike Danforth. Also this week, we say a fond farewell to intern Becky Silvermintz. Thanks for all your help. Good luck to you, Becky. You've been great. Panel, how will John McCain top Obama's big acceptance speech? Tom Baudet.
A squadron of F-16s will fly out of the sun over Minneapolis, dropping surrender or die leaflets on St. Paul, while McCain drives a team of Belgian workhorses through the set of A Prairie Home Companion.
Allison Stewart.
As a counterpoint to the huge Obama-rama, McCain will have a more intimate audience with some of his supporters, not at one of his 6, 7, 8, 9 homes, but at a newly purchased little place, purchased by wife Cindy McCain, the Taj Mahal.
Roy Blunt, Jr.
The next 5 people who call this number, I will give them one of my houses, and my wife will stock the fridge with beer.
Well, if John McCain does any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Tom Baudet, Allison Stewart, and Roy Blunt Jr. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.